Hello everyone, welcome to The Great Indoors. This is episode 2 of season 8 coming to you from MWC 2024 in Barcelona. Now we kicked it off last week with episode 1, and as we discussed, almost everything at the show this year is enveloped in artificial intelligence. So given this, is there anything else to talk about? Welcome to The Great Indoors, a podcast where we look at the technological implications brought about by the next industrial revolution and how this could potentially help solve the biggest problems facing humanity. I'm your host, Matt Roberts, and joining me is my co-pilot and producer, Larissa Yee. So for episode 2, we're back in Barcelona at MWC 2024, and like I said last week, it's bigger and better than ever before. The Amdocs booth and TGI recording area are simply stunning, and our guests during this show are simply out of this world. Now, over the coming weeks, we will continue to bring you actual conversations recorded from Barcelona, the biggest telecom show on the planet, and every single one is incredible. Now, as we've mentioned before, and I talked about just a moment ago, AI has taken over this show like something new we've never seen before. It's phenomenal. And as we move this season forward, we will continue to feature discussions based on artificial intelligence and generative AI. Though what about some of the other hot topics and trends that have been discussed in previous years? Terms such as 5G, 6G, private enterprise networks, O-RAN, edge compute, and metaverse. Have they now disappeared into obscurity forever? Commissioned to the MWC history books, having now been usurped by the new kid on the block, generative AI? Because if we take private enterprise networks, there's a general consensus that the full potential of private networks is yet to be reached, particularly in the US. And while there's considerable activity and investment in private networks, the market's complexity, the cost of private cellular solutions, and the bespoke nature of deployments are seen as barriers to wider adoption. Now, rather than be commissioned to the history books, could it be that the new kid, generative AI, helps ignite and propel these things forward? So to discuss this further in today's episode, I'm joined by four incredible guests. Caroline Chan, the VP of Network and Edge Group from Intel. Her colleague Bhupesh Agrawal, the General Manager of Global Business Development and Sales at Intel. Chris McKenna, the Worldwide Head of Business Development of Private 5G at AWS. And Raghu Masomalamani, the General Manager of Amdocs Technology and Amdocs Labs. So buckle up, let's get started. So welcome back to The Great Indoors here at MWC Barcelona 2024. And I'm delighted and excited to welcome Caroline Chan, who's been on the podcast before from Las Vegas. She's the VP of Network and Edge Group at Intel. And Bhupesh Agrawal, the General Manager of Global Business Development and Sales Enablement at Intel as well. So welcome both of you to The Great Indoors and welcome back, Caroline.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. It's a pleasure. Caroline, for our listeners, just give a brief overview of yourself and your role at Intel currently.
Yep. So I have been in Intel for 15 years, 15, long time Intel person. And from day one, I've been focusing on doing virtualization and disaggregation of the network. Mm-hmm. By that, we meant the cellular network. And now, eventually, you may have heard names like Open RAN, virtualized RAN, disaggregated network, virtualized network, cloud native. And all of that really is a way for us to drive a much better economy of scale by using the general purpose compute to do what traditionally has to be done with the ASIC or purpose built hardware to drive a much better return and total TCO, total cost of ownership for our operators and drive a much better participation of our suppliers.
Yeah.
So now we are here. We are. We have 5G. We are in Mobile Congress of 5G is being widely deployed. But we do have a problem that is that 5G monetization has yet to take hold. A lot of times we're still using 5G just for the consumer for iPhone download and Android and so on. We need to take that and combine that with all the AI that's happening and get into the digital transformation space in the enterprise. So kind of that's like where I'm focusing my energy
on. Okay, excellent, excellent, Caroline.
Rupesh? So Caroline is my boss.
Oh, what's okay.
Yeah, so whatever she said, I do a subset of it. But my day-to-day role is to focus on private 5G.
Yeah.
So I focus on working with the solution providers, system integrators like MDocs.
Yes.
And even the enterprises directly to create a push and pull for private 5G.
Okay, so. Perfect. So welcome both of you again. Let's get into it because you said something right at the beginning there that I'd like to dig a little deeper on, Caroline. And that's about 5G monetization. So we've been coming to this show for many years, many other shows. 5G. We've speculated about all these ornate, exciting use cases that are going to take us to the next level. And like you mentioned, Caroline, other than you know the regular services consumers and enterprises consumed by the network, fixed wireless access has been successful for many of the US operators. What's holding 5G monetization back?
I think number one is that we need to stop talking technology. When we are doing this, selling this into the operators, we're speaking among ourselves. This familiar language about uplink, downlink, coverage, cell edge data, and so on and so forth. But when you're going to talk to a CIO, for example, if you're going to come, wanted to deploy a private 5G inside Intel factories, you are talking to our factory general manager. We are talking to our CIO in IT group. That's not the language they wanted to hear. They have their different KPI, production quotas, security. God forbid we ever gonna get a hack. Like a downtime of 10 minutes in a private network can result in for an auto manufacturer, is a 7 cars loss production.
Wow.
So there's a deep penalty to it. Way more than what you would see today in a consumer market where you pick up a cell phone, you can't make a call, okay, I get into Wi-Fi, do a Wi-Fi calling. There are obviously penalties for the consumer side, but the penalty for a enterprise who shifted their production system to a private network is much, much bigger.
Yeah, yeah.
So in that environment, we need to stop talking technology. We still talk about the business problem we want to solve. Talk about how do we improve their production speed, improve efficiency, safety for workers, security, and drive a much more autonomous decision-making. One example, I was listening to yesterday at another event, they were sharing the private network penetration in China is 10x,
yeah, yeah.
10x the rest of the world combined.
Yeah.
They started early, it was a government mandate, a strong persuasion, and many of the enterprises have already gone through the digital transformation. Rest of the world is falling behind. My point is that the people are still asking, do we really need private network? Is it really going to help me? Look at the world's second largest economy. That's China. They're doing it. They continue to invest in that kind of number. I think the proof point is over to say whether we need it. The question is, how do we do this in a different type of political environment, like in the Western world? Without that kind of government mandate, how do we pull an ecosystem together to address the digital transformation that people want to see? Now, by the way, China is not doing it just because for the sake of it. They do it because they need to uplift their manufacturing environment to a state of the art.
Yeah.
Right? There was a video showing the event. There was the busiest port in China. There's nobody working.
Yeah, yeah.
All you see is everything's autonomous. Not just automatic, but it's autonomous decision making. That kind of closed loop, meaning connectivity plus AI on the edge, it really transforms. Yeah. It's unbelievable. Yeah. Think about all the injuries avoided, speed, efficiency just improved. We need to get there.
Yeah.
So that's where we are today.
Right. Now, it's interesting, and it was Chetan Sharma who went to China on a tour, and he came back and he said exactly that. I cannot believe the adoption, the usage in China. Now, to you, Bhupesh, so as far as you're concerned, the technology is sound, but the language we're using, the way we're marketing it, probably needs tweaking.
Matt, Caroline used some keywords I think that industry should focus on. Right? One is the digital transformation. It's not about private 5G or private 6G or private LTE or something like that, right? It's all about the digital transformation of the enterprise and the needs that they have when they are doing the digital transformation. Remember, what enterprise needs? They want to see higher productivity, lower cost. They want to see better customer experience and a better environment for their employees. That also leads to. Those are the KPIs that are driving the digital transformation. Now, enterprises are also realizing that in this journey of digital transformation, the existing connectivity frameworks that they have, whether it's the Ethernet or whether it's LoRaWAN, whether it's Wi-Fi and all, it's not sufficient. But the challenge that we have in this industry is that this industry is so fragmented that everyone wants to go and talk about the why 5G. Why, and then the, some question, then somebody asks, like, okay, why not LTE? Right? Like, if we start going beyond those ones, looking at like what Caroline was saying, even looking at TCO. TCO is very high right now. Looking at those things and say like, hey, how can we reduce it so that it makes it so simple for the enterprise? Like we were working with one of those shipping companies. They want to move from the next to the next generation Wi-Fi, and they realize that for that, they also have to take away the existing backhaul infrastructure. And then they said, like, if we have to do that thing, why not we move to the private networks? It's a clear business value problem. So this is what, like, I think we just have to, the industry has to continue driving it. Otherwise, we are going to face the challenge where everyone is going to say, like, hey, how can we monetize it?
The challenge will continue. So what do you think, Caroline? Do you think fundamentally, the solutions and the technology is sound, and we just need to change our approach, our language, and the way we're positioning this with, like you said, enterprise IT departments that don't want to talk telco.
Correct. I think the technology is here. We need to package it. We probably need to fine-tune it. That's where system integrators' role really come in places, healthcare versus retail versus logistics and manufacturing. We probably need to do customization. I personally think that we are at a point, it's probably 80-20. We have the 80% of the technology is sound. 5G is secure, has high efficiency, has the ecosystem supported. The 20% is to customize it for a particular industry, and importantly also is to bring in the application developers for that vertical to welcome them into our develop application on top of us. That means that we need to provide a common API. No one wants to develop something for one and not be used for others. That's why the iPhone, the Android is so popular, because there's two. You do it for Android, you do it for iPhone, then you get all the rest, most of the world. We need to get to that point to try to get to, we can probably get to two, but we probably can get to something that's 80-90% there, 10%. That is much easier for the software developers to embrace. And then the other thing is obviously to have several successful use cases. That way the CIOs, the factory owners, and people that don't necessarily do telco network rollout for a living are comfortable with the idea.
And same question, a different question rather, Caroline, but from what you've seen and your experience globally, where's the low-hanging fruit from an industry perspective in the United States? What industry should really be looking at China and saying, hey, we should be doing that? It's pretty clear what they're, you know, some just, you know, there must be, what's the word, more, there must be a ranking on who can benefit from this right out of the gate.
Well, right off the gate, what we already seen revenue coming in is from oil and gas.
Oil and gas.
Yeah, because they many times they are unconnected.
Ah, okay.
Offshore or at places where less human, more machine than human. It makes it's difficult to justify, say, for an operator who gets their money from human SIM cards to deploy there.
Yeah.
Alaska is a very good example where there's bulk of the oil is coming from Alaska in the United States, if you know the geographic area. But there's very few. I think the entire state has less than 1 million population, and the state is twice the size of Texas.
Yeah.
Sparsely covered. And yet they produce the most needed commodity, you know, oil for us. So in those cases, when there's unconnected, it's relatively easy to justify. providing the private network, a dedicated network for them, provide a coverage. So for the workers, push to talk, for the machineries, connecting sensor status and feed it up. Because most oil and gas rely on seismic data to determine where to drill, which angle to the drill bits are. The cost of missing that is very high. So that's why how we're seeing the oil and gas first adopt. The second thing that's happening a lot is the utilities. There's a lot of mandate to do so-called smart utilities, smart grid, because we're facing an energy crisis. So that's another part that government's actually providing funding. Education is another one.
So let's switch topics a little bit. That's really interesting. Thank you. Not one of these episodes I cannot perform this year without talking about generative AI. And, you know, we've come to the show for many years. Like, we talked about some of the previous buzzes and the state of them, particularly OpenRAN. What are your personal thoughts, Caroline, on all the noise, hype, excitement about generative AI? Is it justified?
It's we all have seen it already in the network. The two aspects of generative AI will benefit us. Number one is improve the network operation efficiency, such as energy management that is already been rolling out. The second aspect is using that to generate more use cases on top of the private network, dedicated network, even public network. There is a little bit of level of hype. However, where AI really benefits is on the edge. And we look at, just take example of Intel. We already have 200,000 instances of Edge across, because we've been in Edge business, embedded business for a long, long time.
Yeah.
We announced an Edge platform, Edge AI platform, that's going back to N-4 generations. That means this year's CPU and 4 years, that all supporting all the way up to CPU 4 years ago, that allows people who have already rolled this out in the factories to still be able to roll out the Edge platform so you don't have to, you know, swap out everything in order to run AI. There's a degree of hype. However, we are seeing the real benefits now. And I think there's a long way to go for AI to truly deliver what it needs to be. But the cycle is definitely accelerating. And I'm saying, with connectivity, private network plus edge AI will significantly accelerate the B2B revenue, the digital transformation. I'm very hopeful.
And I'm going to ask you a sort of off-piece question now, because I've managed to extrapolate some free market research through this question that is for my own personal gratification, but it shows the breadth of generative AI and where people are using it in their everyday life. So, Caroline, where are you using generative AI right now?
Writing articles, writing essays.
Yeah.
My boss wants me to write press release. I'm using that.
And you're using it?
Yeah. Did I just disclose my secret?
I was like, that Caroline's a wonderful writer. Look at this. It's incredible.
Look at that long email that I just wrote.
Matt, I would say, like, when we talk about Gen AI, one of the things that I think everyone is a little bit challenged is, like, the thing that it's like they try to put Gen AI in everything. Like,
yes,
we are making a mistake, right?
Yeah,
because we have to look at from the.
Sorry to interrupt. Also, one thing that I want to add to that is they're not just trying to put it in everything, but there's a confusion between AI that we've known for many, many years,
yes,
from the bit. And generative AI.
And generative AI. Yeah. Right, absolutely.
We're almost out of time. The time has flown by, right? And I think, Caroline, you'll know this, but we like to finish on our TGI to go quick fire round. And it just helps our guests learn our listeners learn a little more about our guests. And we can finish with a bit of fun and laughter at the end of this long and arduous but incredibly uplifting week. And I think you know this format. So I'm going to give you two choices. You're just going to give me your preference.
Okay, Matt, start with Caroline, because I want to see what you're going to ask her.
No, because she's your boss, you need to give the same answer. That's the question, isn't it?
TGI to go.
So first question, Caroline, if you had to sit down to watch basketball or football?
Football. American football, not soccer.
Okay. Who's your team then?
Dallas Cowboys.
Ah. Well, you live in Dallas, right?
Correct.
Ah, there you go. There you go.
Soccer.
Ah, good. Okay.
Germany.
Germany?
My favorite.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Yeah.
I'll tell you about how I had a very interesting answer before that. Okay. I'll talk about in a second. Now, you're flying home. You're going to relax. You're not going to be preparing for a presentation or a press briefing or something. Would you rather watch a drama or a comedy?
Comedy.
Yeah. Have you seen any good comedies recently that you could recommend to me before I head back to Toronto?
Nothing came to mind.
Okay.
Something's been... I think there's a lack of... The comedy we used to know has been way better.
Mm-hmm.
Chevy Chase, yeah. Love him. Yeah. Right now, I don't see anything that's really good can compare to what he has.
No, it's a good point. It's a good point. Vipash.
Yeah, first of all, as I'm flying back, I'm just going to hope that I'm not getting any text message from Caroline. The second one is I like to watch serious movies and all. Mm-hmm. Right, so I think, and my wife does not like to sit with me while I'm watching the movie.
Okay.
So yeah, I will just go home and then watch some movies in the night.
Yeah. Okay. I've asked this question all week and had some very strange responses. But ChatGPT-4 or Gemini Advanced, which one is your preference? Or are you using another?
ChatGPT.
You are using ChatGPT. Yeah.
I'm not using anything. Okay. And the reason is because...
And the reason is because your boss is sat there.
No, yeah. The reason I... See, it's a personal thing, right? Why I'm not using it. And because I also read about it that every 3 searches of ChatGPT, you use 16 ounces of water.
Really?
For the data center.
Really?
Yeah. So wow. Imagine like we are just sitting there, we are doing the queries and all those things, but we are not... intentionally or unintentionally, we are not realizing how much impact we are making on our planet Earth. Right?
Because of the processing required.
Because the processing, all the electricity, everything required in data centers and everything. But, so every three searches result in 16.
But is there an argument that the benefits in efficiency from generative AI offset that power consumption? So for example, in my home, I've got the Google Nest thermostat, it optimizes everything
to
be ecologically friendly. Could generative AI, and I asked an environmentalist, play a part in helping climate change? He was like, yeah, I think so. So we don't know, but there could be an offsetting positive on the environment.
That could be, yeah. I'm sure you are right. I think it's more of maybe what is there, what is happening in the short term.
In the short term,
what can be possible in long.
Yeah. But it was a concern raised by Chris Antlers from TBR when I spoke to him yesterday. The first thing he said is power.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So we're almost at the end of the show. We have a bar over here. Would you drink sangria or kava?
Kava.
Have you had much kava this week?
Every day. That's what gets me through the day.
Vipash?
I have a principle that on business trips, I do not drink liquor. And the reason is very simple. When I want to get
because
up in the morning...
Because your boss is not there.
She sends a message, 6 o'clock in the morning, 7 o'clock in the morning. But on the serious side, right?
Yeah,
like
no
we
idea.
Come here
yeah,
for
yeah.
business, right? I want yeah, to be fully fresh in the morning,
yeah.
right? And so that's my plan.
No, I'm the same. I'm absolutely the same. But at the end of the show,
yeah.
and when I've done my last... I may have a cheeky beer or something. I don't know. We'll see.
So
we'll
I will take whatever Caroline is going to take it. Yeah. How about that?
And... So you could have a free vacation paid for by Amdocs. I've just offered that up. After the show, would you go to Thailand or Ibiza? Caroline.
Thailand.
Yeah?
The food is wonderful.
Oh, of course.
Weather.
Of course. Ocean. The sea.
Yeah, I want to go to Thailand, but then after that, I want to go to Angkor Wat.
To?
Angkor Wat.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
So that the whole thing, like the Southeast Asia.
Yeah.
is my dream thing where I want to spend some time there.
Oh, right.
Yeah, Angkor Wat temples and all. Like here also, right, like 4 or 5 years ago, right, I took my son to Peru, right, we did the Inca Trail, right, he was 8 years old then, and then we saw the Spanish architecture. And then while coming, this is my first time, but looking at the architecture of Barcelona, it was connecting those two dots.
Yes.
Fascinating.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Wonderful answer. So we're out of time, but I've really enjoyed the conversation, really had some fun. Thank you very much for joining me, both of you, and for partaking in our Great Indoors podcast. Are there any last notes of wisdom or things you would like to impart on our listeners before we close out today?
positive, stay positive. I think the world is going to get better because we have now connectivity, much more than more prevalent than before, and we have AI. I think this is going to improve our livelihood and our children's.
Awesome.
Right. That is correct, right? We have the connectivity now, and we have the intelligence, right? I think it's good. And on the lighter side, I'm looking forward for the voucher that, for the paid vacation that you talk about, right?
Okay, well, we'll close it out there. But thank you both very much. It's been a pleasure. We'll see you in 12 months' time.
Yes, hopefully thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you, Matt.
So here we are, we're back, TGI, the Great Indoors at MWC 2024 this year. And it's Monday afternoon. It's the busiest day, I always say, of the show. And I'm now going to be joined by a fellow Brit. His name is Chris McKenna. He's the Head of Business Development, Private 5G at AWS.
Indeed.
Welcome, Chris.
Thank you. Yes, it's Monday, crazy show, but super excited to be here. I lead business development for Private 5G, which is a big domain here in Mobile World Congress. So lots of people doing it, lots of partners, lots of customers, lots of competition, so it's all good fun.
Give us, our listeners, a bit of a history of yourself, Chris. Obviously, you live in the United States now, you're at AWS, but how did you get, what was your journey, basically?
Yeah, actually, it's interesting that Private 5G is kind of like the intersection between telecoms and enterprise IT. I come initially from an enterprise IT background and I went into telecoms. I did IT inside telecoms for a number of years, probably more than I'd like to admit. And then I moved into telco and telco networks. So I sort of naturally span both, which is why it's kind of relevant that I'm now working in Private 5G, because it's very much that intersection of both.
How mature and advanced is the cloudification of networks versus the traditional IT move to the cloud? Where would you say they are on a scale, you know, as far as parity? Is there any parity, or is one ahead of the other?
No, I think parity is definitely not there yet. I think IT have been virtualizing applications for a couple of decades already now. Both in the public and private cloud. And I think, you know, we started our cloud in 2006. So even our public cloud is already about 18 years old.
Right.
But network cloudification inside telcos is something that's, it has been around, it's been spoken about probably for a good 6 or 7 years now, but only in the last 18 months to 2 years are we really seeing this happening.
Right, okay.
And it's, so definitely nowhere near the same level of maturity.
Yeah.
But you know, that's changing every day. I think one of the things I really realized in this show today versus previous years is that it's becoming real. It's not all about proof of concepts anymore. We're no longer proving the technology. The technology is proven.
Yeah.
What we're now showing is real world deployments and real customers really ramping up their use of the public cloud. And
anywhere in the world, are there more areas that are embracing this quicker than others?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Spectrum is the key here. So we do see a direct correlation between those countries that have opened up Spectrum for this purpose and the growth of the industry in those countries versus the countries that haven't.
Yeah.
What we see is, you know, the US led the way with CBRS and really made it simple for customers to, in an automated way, request and gain access to Spectrum for this purpose.
Yeah.
And some of our partners, Amdocs supply, you know, Amdocs are one of the players in Spectrum access management, and we have other partners like Federated Wireless, for example, who supply that. And it's all done in an automated fashion. So for the end customer, it's great. You know, you can get access to what used to be impossible Spectrum to get access to.
Yeah.
And we're seeing that sort of proliferate across the world now. But there are a lot of countries still where we have to go through CSP partners, through the telcos. And we're not seeing the same level of adoption there. I'm not necessarily saying it's because of the telcos, but I think the lack of ease of access to Spectrum, it does slow things down.
And do you think it will be a wholesale move to the cloudification of the network, or do you think there will be a coexistence with the traditional world?
Well, obviously, we would love it to be a wholesale move, but the reality says that that's not the case. I think telcos are heavily regulated. They provide essential services to people. They cannot take risks that some other industries can, which means that we will see a careful migration. I think what we see is telcos adopting use cases that really bring good value to them. So disaster recovery, for example, we've got a lot of customers putting workloads into AWS that are there for disaster recovery purposes. And the reason that's useful to them is that they can deploy it with a minimal footprint and then use our tool sets to scale those when they need them. So they're not paying one plus one. You know, they're not deploying the same amount of infrastructure. They're deploying just a minimum amount. And then our tool sets can automatically scale those if they have an event where they need it. So that's a really useful and interesting use case that's taking off first. And that gains trust. And then they see how we work and how we can perform in those environments. And then we're seeing more and more customers start to move live traffic in small batches and then, you know, ramping up those batches all the time. So no big bang, but that's fine. We, you know, the risk appetite just is not there to take those big bang approaches.
And I hear cases, and I was speaking to Dell about the private enterprise network they put in for a brewery, and they're demonstrating it on their booth, and they're using AI with NVIDIA. And how is the demand from the enterprises to deploy private networks? Because you talked about that it's a bit complex. They don't really understand it. And that's why you went into, you know, the IPW in many respects. But is the demand there significantly?
The demand is there, and we also believe there's a lot of demand that the enterprises don't yet know that they have. And that's part of the purpose of the IPW program is to help enterprises to understand what they might be able to do. So as part of the program, we deployed a portal, and as that portal evolves, it's taking on a more industry verticalized approach where we're exposing these solutions so that customers can go in and see what other customers are doing. So if you are a brewery, you don't necessarily have to be a telco guy to see the benefits of private wireless. You know, we can improve their productivity. We can improve their supply chain. We can deploy AI tool sets, as you mentioned, to help them to automate simple tasks, to speed up their factory floor. We can do defect detection at a rate that we couldn't do without AI. We released a case study last year where we deployed a single AWS instance into the edge, and it was analyzing 64 elements off a production line that it would have taken the same amount of time for one person to analyze one element. So very simple business case, 64 times one, you know, or 64 versus one. So there's real business benefit today.
And it would be remiss of me not to mention generative AI.
Of course.
That's exploded. Obviously, everybody's talking about it.
Yeah.
AI is nothing new. But generative AI almost reignited the discussion on AI. So how is it helping you as AWS and the customers that you serve? How are you putting that to practice now?
Yeah, so, and you're right, Gen AI is just everywhere and it's in every use case and every conversation we have with every customer. It really just starts and ends with Gen AI. It's quite incredible. I don't think I've ever seen anything in my career that's just come along and swept everything away. And
you know what's really interesting about you just saying that last statement? I've had many people who have been on the industry 25, 30 years. The one question I say is exactly what you said. What's the biggest thing that's come along in the last 25, 30 years that's transformed everything? So you've just mentioned, as far as you're concerned, this is the biggest step change, technology, transformational, cataclysmic, call it what you will, innovation that you've witnessed.
It is, definitely. And it's very relevant to private networks as well. So if you think about the purpose of private networks, it's really to deploy something in order for a customer to achieve a certain business benefit. Now, I know that sounds really broad and vague, but let me give you some examples. If a customer says to us, I'm transforming my organization, I want to digitize, and as part of that, I want to automate more of my factory floor than I do today because I want to yield the, you know, the financial bottom line benefits of that. Well, how do you do that is the question. And you don't do that just with a network. You do that by deploying sensors, cameras into your production environment and then doing something with the data that comes off those devices and those cameras. And doing something could mean assessing the images or assessing video and making decisions. This is the crucial part, making decisions based upon that data. That's all AI.
Yeah.
So we're just seeing this massive proliferation of AI through just about every use case you can imagine, because without AI, it's hard to show that real business benefit. So what we're trying to do in AWS is make sure that everyone has equal access to Gen AI and AI technology, because we don't believe it's something that should be in the hands of the few who have the deep pockets and the financial muscle to really to really exploit it. So our approach is by saying, and it's a little different from some of our competitors who you hear more of in the industry, our approach is to say to all of our B2B customers, we will give you the tool sets to build anything you like, anything you can possibly imagine using AI and Gen AI. So, and by tool sets, I mean, we have this three-layered approach. We build custom silicon for training and for inference. So that's custom chips coming out of our foundries, and they go into our cloud. So all of our customers have equal access to that.
Yeah.
On top of that, then we have a bunch of large language models that we expose to customers through a framework we call Amazon Bedrock, which we released a few months ago. And then on top of that, we have a bunch of developer productivity tool sets. Things like Amazon Code Whisperer, Amazon Q. These are tool sets that anybody can leverage to do things really easily. So Amazon Code Whisperer will generate code for you, generate pages of code for you based upon text inputs. So it really simplifies the process. So what we're seeing is, we expose all of that to our developer community, and we see a sort of explosion in productivity that we ourselves would not be able to do. That we expose it to developers globally, and they come up with weird and wonderful things that we could never have imagined. So that's kind of our approach. As part of the IPW program, we leverage all of the AWS tool sets. So anybody that engages in the program will have access to all of that right out of the gate.
Oh, cool. Now, we're coming to the end. Chris, I've really enjoyed the conversation. It's gone really quick, which at this stage of the day is novel. Now, how we finish the podcast is a quick-fire multiple choice called TGI to go.
TGI to go.
Favorite city, London or Paris?
London.
Ben, how often did you go back, by the way?
I've only been in the US for a year and a half.
Oh, okay.
So, and I've been back a few times. I'm actually going on Thursday. So,
oh, yeah?
Looking forward to that.
I went back for the first time in 8 years last Wednesday.
Oh, wow.
I hadn't been back for that long.
Wow.
And it blew my mind a little bit. I didn't go to London. I flew into Manchester, and then I went to visit my mother in North Wales. But it was really good to be back.
Yeah, of course. It's always good to be back.
Question number two. And no one has given me an answer to this. I don't know why. But do you prefer ChatGPT-4 or the new Gemini Advanced from Google?
So you're asking an AWS guy if I prefer Microsoft or Google?
Well, what would be your preference?
Well, I probably have to say Bedrock from AWS.
But is that available? Could I go and download?
Yes.
Yeah, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay, cool.
It's available today, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know. Because I listened to a few podcasts last week from the New York Times where they were getting a little bit excited about Gemini, particularly the pay version, Gemini Advanced. And obviously ChatGPT is just synonymous with consumer generative AI. So it's good to know that there are, I know there are more options, but of course you would recommend Bedrock.
Well, of course.
Yeah.
I mean, look, they're all absolutely incredible. The stuff that is happening now. I mean, I was looking at the text-to-video stuff the other day, and it's just mind-blowing how fast we can create real content now. It's amazing.
Yeah.
I have used them I was going to say write documents, but played with them to write documents. And they're just incredible.
No.
It blows my mind still.
No, it is. It's I was at the Boston Consulting Group Generative AI Summit in New York back in November.
Right.
And they had a plethora of speakers from all different parts of media and entertainment, and how it's going to revolutionize video creation, movie production. There was an analyst from BGC basically saying the next Avatar will come from two kids in a garage in Illinois, right? And then showing some examples of where it is now, and it's just like...
It is mind-blowing. The only thing that scares me a little bit is this blurring of the truth and reality. At some point, you don't know what's real and what's not, and that's a bit scary.
And I don't want to get into politics, I always look around when I say that, but I saw Donald Trump talking on one of the channels.
Okay, you're in Spain now.
Yeah, I'm in Spain, so I'm okay.
Don't get into it in the US.
But he, I thought, oh my God, that's a deep fake. Somebody's...
You never
know. And guess what? It wasn't a deep fake. He was actually saying that. But, it made me even now question the veracity of the sources that you're seeing.
A deep fake probably would have made more sense.
And that's why I questioned whether it was real or not. Answer this question. It's an existential question. And obviously, you're British. So who was the better footballer, Messi or Ronaldo?
Oh, that's one of the all-time great dilemmas. Only one of them has lifted the World Cup. That's probably the pinnacle of anything. And he lifted it by dragging his entire team towards that World Cup. Yeah. He's just incredible. I also think if you look at the way they've ended their careers, I think one of them has sort of slunked off and the other one has gone and completely changed US America. Football in an incredible way. Yeah, I think Messi is just an absolute legend.
That's a good answer. And you are a football supporter,
Very much so, Liverpool.
You're in good company. I'm a big Liverpool supporter.
Good.
It's the one thing I miss in Canada. I was a season ticket holder all my life.
Nice.
And it's the one thing. And I missed the game last night because I was here working.
Sadly, me too. Yeah. But when I saw the VAR decision against Van Dijk, I thought, oh, the writing's on the wall here.
Right.
And then, can't complain, a 118th minute winner. So we'll take that.
Do you know Gary Walker from AWS?
I know Gary very well. He's ex-Amdocs, actually.
Yeah, and he's a really good friend of mine. He's a big Liverpool supporter.
He is. He and I live in the same area.
We
work together a lot.
Yeah, cool. He's a great guy. And my final TGI to go today, Chris. It's a bit nerdy, but Star Wars or Star Trek?
Oh, that is a difficult one. As a kid, I was a Trekkie, without doubt. Always a Trekkie. I've always loved Star Wars, of course. I think these days my kids are so into Star Wars that I haven't been able to get them into Star Trek. So our family is much more Star Wars these days. But for me growing up, always a Trekkie.
Awesome. Great. And so that's it. I want to thank you for joining us today, Chris. It's been a brilliant discussion. Really enjoyed talking to you and meeting you. I hope you have a great week here. And
thank you very much.
I can't believe it's still day one, but that's that's good.
I know. Almost at the end of day one. We're almost there. Yeah.
We're almost there. Almost at the end.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Chris.
So welcome back to the great indoors here at Barcelona. 2024 MWC. It's the final day, day three. And I'm delighted to welcome my colleague and good friend. And his name is Raghu Marcelamine. And he is the GM and Global Head of Solutions and Amdocs Labs here at Amdocs. So, Raghu, welcome to the Great Indoors.
It's my pleasure, Matt. Yeah. It's always fun to talk to you.
No, excellent. Now, let's start. Let's begin with, for our listeners, this is the first time you've been on the show, just give a history of yourself and a quick outlay of what you do currently at Amdocs.
Yes. My job is around two functions in the company. One of that is to essentially work with our global customer base to help them to paint a roadmap for their technology evolution, both in IT and the network side, to adapt things like digital transformation or generative AI or 5G monetization, network orchestration. So my job is to essentially take the technology to market, let's say, and then help the customer actually consume the technology in the way they want to consume, in the pace they want to consume, end of the day delivering value, and help them to bring global perspectives and experiences to them so that we can actually help them to actually get the best of Amdocs. That's my first job.
Yeah.
The second thing I do is to innovate in what we call Amdocs Labs, which is plural, multiple labs. We have five logical labs, so to speak. I'll start with the core of the lab's function is that to help the sales teams to essentially demonstrate what we do in the company and in a way, in a fun way, also in a technology way so that it can, one is to showcase, the second one is to imagine. Mm-hmm. Make our customers imagine what they can do with the art of possibility with our technologies, right? So this spans from supporting the sales functions, supporting events like Mobile World Congress here. A lot of the technology that you demonstrated here over the 4 days is all come from our labs.
Yeah.
There's the part of the labs also about thinking out, not today, not yesterday, not tomorrow, but we think about like what's out there in 5 years. Yeah. How much of 5G monetization is real? Can I actually monetize slices? So we actually experiment with real stuff there.
Yeah.
So we actually bring in partners, whether it be cloud partners, software partners, networking partners, all of the stuff. Some of the stuff you see in the booth here in terms of smart cities, logistics solutions, we actually bring multiple partners, get them onto our marketplace, try them out. We throw a lot of solutions out that doesn't work.
Yeah.
And we take what works to the customers.
And which partners are you currently working with in those labs, Raghu?
I'm not sure where to start. It's a long list. Yeah. Okay, so I'll put it into categories for you.
Yes.
If it helps. First category is the network partners. You have the big iron vendors like Ericsson's and Nokia's of the world. They actually sell everything full stack. But the beauty is that the network is software now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
If you really push the envelope on, I can run entire wireless network on commodity hardware. This is the dream. This was the dream 10 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
We're almost there. So we actually bring partners who are in the mix and match of Open RAN, Virtual RAN, Cloud Core, and et cetera, et cetera. And we bring them to essentially, we have about a dozen partners we work with in the network area. And then we have security. Security is everybody's interest and importance in terms of bringing security at different layers. One at network layer, two at the IT layer, three at the application layer, about when you connect applications. So we bring security partners. We have about three or four of them we're working with. The most fun part is we see about 65 to 70 startups in a year through the labs. So you work with 5G Open Innovation Labs, our own curation, the Israeli startup economy. So we actually put them through our labs to see which ones are relevant for our telcos. You know, there are lots of interesting ideas, but can telcos make money out of it?
Yeah.
Or even relevant? It has to be some level of adjacency to their business. Why would somebody buy something from a telco versus the others? So we pick those adjacent technologies, what they can actually monetize with above and beyond connectivity. So we see about 70 startups. So you had fun with the logistics solution, which was from three different partners plus a cloud vendor.
So we talked at this show for many years, 5G, then the next year 5G, then 5G, then 5G,
5G, 5G, 5G,
5G, 5G, and you know, there was a lot of expectation and hype, and some of it's been realized, particularly by fixed wireless access and some other things, but it was a very yearly thing.
Yeah.
It was only a year ago, can you believe it or not, which was marked 4 months, 30th of November 2022, when OpenAI launched ChatGPT in the world. And now, again, in that short time frame, you have demonstrable, real, Gen AI-infused experiences and use cases to demonstrate to the world. That is an indication of the pace.
How fast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's phenomenal.
It is phenomenal. And the specialization goes into essentially get that to the reality is even more mind-blowing, right? If think about it, you can get an answer from Gen AI in many ways. It's options. Now we're talking about specialized large language models. One thing does better on translation. The other one does the better on summarizing it. Another one does better on something. And then we have our telco verticalization.
Yeah.
So when somebody says, you know, why is my bill high? It has a context around it. We brought that to life. And showed it to our audience here to say, okay, how do you decompose that simple three-word question into a comprehensible answer that is personalized, contextualized, and human readable, and then that's accurate and consistent.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's really hard stuff to do. But the pace at which you're absolutely right. Yeah. In terms of getting this right, in a safe way, in a responsible way, so that you don't blow your cost out of proportion, is what we do.
And I want to put something to you just to get your thoughts on this. It just made me think of something. Yesterday, I met with the head of data at AT&T. And we talked about the guardrails and getting it right. Because if you get it wrong, you can't undo, right?
Yeah.
And by having a specialized LLM based off, you know, the more bigger version, not only does it give you that degree of customization and specialization towards that specific domain you're addressing, but it also prevents, and this was his word, again, another word, I stole a lot of words this week, but his word was poisoning. You can poison the LLM. You know, if you get it wrong and the poison comes into those trillions and trillions of data points, by having a specialized, almost contained LLM, because a telco LLM doesn't need everything that exists, right? But you, from a security perspective, you also prevent the poisoning of the well, right? That's just a conceptual thing I thought about, but it's valid, isn't it? It's another advantage, I think, in specializing your telco GPT.
We have to be careful. We have to be careful to go too conservative and too much of a containerized environment. Yeah. Let's face it, telco is still one of the many industries. And the world out there, the large language model players are feeding amount of data that you can't imagine.
It's difficult.
Okay? And it's only very few companies can do that. Yeah. So not getting the advantage of such a big, large data sets and the benefit of that.
It's a balance.
It's a balance.
Yeah.
And who gets that right in terms of you have your regulated industry? As you correctly said, if you say something to your customer, it's a commitment. They expect you to stand behind it.
Yeah.
And if you say something, you need to deliver it. And you cannot say something wrong and then go and say, just forget it. It was Jenny. Yeah. I know you're representing a company.
Yeah.
So you're right. So we have to get it right. But at the same time, let's not miss the opportunity.
Let's not miss the opportunity to really take advantage of the potential and the scope of this.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Because we need to have been able to tap into specialized LLMs, plural, that are generic and out there. You don't need to reinvent them. Use them. At the same time, for the core of your business, which is commercial, customer experience, network operations, those are very specialized. Building a very heavy guardrails around them without leaking the stuff to the public domain, but leveraging the public domain. Yeah. Whoever gets this right is going to get the best of both worlds.
I love that. Now, we're almost out of time. Can you believe it? But this is how we finish part one.
All right.
We're going to do TGI to go.
TGI to go.
First question. Hockey or basketball?
Hockey.
Why hockey?
Canadian.
Yeah? Which team?
Ottawa Senators.
Nice. ChatGPT-4 or Gemini Advanced?
GPT-4.
I've asked that question every week. Every guest has answered ChatGPT-4. Even though most of them aren't aware or haven't even used Gemini Advanced, the ones that have definitely a preference.
I think it's a time issue.
Yeah.
So we have to see what Gemini brings in a broader context.
And as a marketer, a marketing issue.
Yep.
You know.
Yep.
Do you like singing or dancing?
Neither.
No? But you had
listening.
You had to do one.
Singing.
Okay. Any particular favorite genre of music?
Yes.
Oh, nice. Smooth.
Yeah.
Now we're going to get back to North America very soon.
All right.
And I'm pretty sure you've had a lot of tapas this week.
More than I should.
Yeah. So we're going to take a break from tapas, but you could have Japanese or Thai. Which one would you go for?
Thai.
Yeah? Do you have good Thai restaurants in Dallas? Is there
many
one you frequent? Oh, okay.
Many.
Oh, that's good. And the final question today, this is always a good one, Star Wars or Star Trek?
Star Trek.
Are you a Trekkie?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, I want to say thank you very much for joining The Great Indoors here in Barcelona, Rigu. We don't have long to go, just a few hours. I want to wish you a safe journey home and say congratulations on the success you've had here this week. It's been phenomenal. I think it's fair to say you and I have been the busiest guys in this show.
It's my pleasure, Matt. Thanks for having me. Anytime, let's do the part two.
Yep.
And looking forward to Mobile World Congress 25.
Right. Great. Right. See you later.
Thank you.
What a great episode two. Brilliant. Energy, enthusiasm, humor, a passion for the industry. So stay tuned as we move this season forward. And please subscribe to our podcast and all the usual podcast channels. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts and enjoyed the show, please rate and review. Also visit our website, mdocs.com/thegreatindoors. Yeah, we'll be back next week for more great conversations. And until then, I'm Matthew Roberts for Amdocs in Barcelona. Have a great day wherever you are.